Hello and welcome to Linoleum
I'm
Knife.
so sleepy from those pancakes.
Yeah, we're in kind of a we may be sugar crashing at some point during this broadcast,
I
but
just made pancakes. I just made
yes,
blueberry pancakes.
they were real good.
They were really, really. I mean, I know I made them and all, and it's sort of immodest to say
But go
otherwise, but
on.
oh man, I'm so good at making pancakes.
You are the king of pancakes. And
It's
I
not
was,
me. It's not me. It's the recipe.
well,
It's the guy, the Clinton Street Bakery guy was on Martha Stewart.
yes.
And I learned how to make them by
But
watching his segment over and over and over again and watching exactly how he folded in the egg whites
right.
and gently whisked the batter
But
with the
you were
dry,
good at
you know.
pancakes even before you
I
had
was all
this.
right. I was all right at pancakes before. I was as good as anyone else, but I, would tell my friends that I'm the king of pancakes to sort of, build my brand, my personal branding.
But the secret ingredient is love.
That's also incorrect. I cook out of greed. I don't really cook out of love for anyone. I mean, I want to feed people when I'm done, but mostly because I want to be praised.
And you want to eat.
And I want to eat. So, like, my first impulse with cooking food is my own personal greed and
I
wanting
see.
to eat that food. And my second impulse is, wait till my friends eat this. They're going to say I'm amazing.
Well, the results are good either way, so I'm not going to complain. The king of pancakes across the table from me is Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
And Alonzo Duralde is the film critic for not many, but nobody really, except for, well, you've just reviewed some things for
Hitfix.com this week.
Hitfix,
We
and
reviewed Priest, which we'll be talking about momentarily.
Who'd you review Priest for?
For Hitfix.
Didn't you just review something for After Elton, too?
No, I'm doing something for them soon, though.
It's not a review, though.
No, I'm doing a review soon, but for a movie that hasn't opened yet.
What's the review? Can you say?
I guess I'm gonna be reviewing Hangover Part 2 for them.
And you reviewed Take Me Home Tonight for some British magazine recently?
Yes,
And
called Heat.
Heat. Anybody in England, do you have a magazine called Heat that we've never even seen?
No, I
You
looked up their
could.
website. It looks kind of like cool teen sort of.
You're kind of a cool teen.
It's sort of like it's the kind of magazine that those girls in Tamara Drew would have been reading.
If it were 1981, you would be kind of a cool teen.
I was not a cool teen in 1981, however.
How old were you?
I was 14. I just wasn't cool.
Oh. All right.
I was as you like to put it, a stone cold super nerd.
You were a stone cold super nerd. I was cooler than everyone else
And it was before the internet, so
in
being a
my high
nerd
school, but
did
they
not
didn't
have any
accept
kind
that.
of cachet, you know.
My high school, no one in my high school could accept the fact that I was cooler than everyone else, and I was shunned, therefore.
You're like on Happy Endings this week, where the high school teacher says, "Oh yeah, I remember you. You were misunderstood." I really was. Yes, Dave White, you were a special snowflake,
I
and
was
no one
totally,
could appreciate
I was
you.
misunderstood, and I, yeah.
Boo hoo.
They, look, I got my revenge
Yeah, you're old now, so
at the
just
prom.
relax, Carrie.
If you had a taste for terror, you took me to the
You
prom.
didn't go to your prom.
I didn't go to my junior prom.
Did you go to your senior
I
prom?
went to my senior prom.
With a date?
Yeah, with an actual, like, girl and everything.
Did you get her a corsage?
Yeah.
Nice.
No, it wasn't that nice. It was
Was
pretty terrible,
it
actually.
like a prickly pear or
She
something?
was really nice. She
I'm
was
sure
this
she
really
was.
nice girl who liked me for I don't even know what reason she liked me. She was really nice.
I certainly don't know.
I was a terrible, terrible person. I was like not all. You know what my the I'm glad she and I have no contact with each other whatsoever now because I can speak freely and say that I went out with her because I knew I would probably get to make out with her at the end of the date.
Really?
And I hadn't done that yet in high
Oh,
school.
okay. You need to check that off the
I had to
list.
check it off the list. I was like, God, I haven't even made out with a girl, and it's almost the end of high school.
I see.
And I got this vibe from her like, you can make out with me at prom if you want.
And you did.
Like, I didn't want anything more. I know most people lose their virginity on prom night, but like, I just was like,
You just wanted the
can
continental
I just
menu.
mark off the list of things that you're supposed to have accomplished by the end of high school? Can I
Make
please
out
just
with a
make
girl.
out with a girl? Yeah,
I
and
did not
so.
make out with either of my junior prom date or my senior prom date, but I like to think I showed them both a good time.
Well, yeah,
We had a nice
sure,
dinner.
sparkling with.
And I'm Facebook friends with both of my prom dates, so that should count for something.
Yes. I suppose I could find this. I suppose I could find this person. I'm sure she's around, and I'm sure she's still really nice too. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, she had no idea I was a total homo at the time. Yeah, right, she probably wouldn't have gone with me. Yeah, you know? Right. Of course, then at that time, I didn't know I was a total homo
exactly,
either.
Exactly, so you can't really blame her.
Yeah, it was not a, you know, it wasn't anything we were all, either one of us aware of at the time.
See, now, if we hadn't taken the week off when Prom came out, this conversation would actually have been germane.
That movie but was boring.
Speaking of events that force women to wear ridiculous dresses, Bridesmaids. Is out, and...
I gotta wake up.
Yes,
I gotta snap out of the pancake coma. Yeah.
Bridesmaids is hilarious, and it is so the right movie at the right time, because the last couple years' worth of woman-centric comedies,
right,
particularly involving weddings, but not necessarily involving weddings, have been...
gross.
Generally terrible, and generally, I think, anti-woman.
So, yeah, no, they're real hateful. They're hateful toward women. Yeah. In fact, I asked a person. I can't now. I'm trying to talk around this because I asked a person who would know.
Okay.
Before going to see Something Borrowed, if it was hateful, and this person said to me, "No, it is not hateful," because this person had already seen the
right
film.
Yes.
Thanks to this person's job.
Right.
At Warner Brothers. and this person said, no, it is not hateful. And I said, okay, that's all I need it to be, is not hateful. And
compared to Bride Wars and 27
yeah,
Dresses, it wasn't
Something
hateful.
Something Borrowed was not hateful compared to Bride Wars or The Ugly Truth.
It was
or
just cuckoo bananas.
27 Dresses. It was just insane and nonsensical.
For more on that, check out last week's podcast. If you missed it. We go on at length about Something Borrowed.
So the but Bridesmaids is
too smart for that.
Is really, really Bridesmaids is just sort of not ostensibly, I'm using the wrong word. Bridesmaids is just sort of coincidentally about a wedding.
Yeah.
You know, like it could have been in any other context.
Right. It's more about a friendship and sort of it hitting the rocks because of various economic and social circumstances.
Right.
And a wedding is a perfect place to do that because there's so much pressure and it's such a big to-do and blah, blah, blah.
Now, I did see it with another male friend who I remember at one point in the movie thinking, why in all the... Because the plot of the movie is Maya Rudolph is getting married to a rich guy and therefore is now entering this sort of new social circle of rich people.
Right.
And her best friend, Kristen Wiig, her life is in shambles at the moment.
Yeah, she had a bakery and it went bankrupt, so she's kind of broke. And
she doesn't have any money. She's had to move back in with her mom.
Who's played by the late Jill Clayton.
She sort of sabotages herself along the way after, like, it's like this domino falling in her life, like a series of them. Like, one bad thing happens, and then it just becomes like this spiral of ongoing failure and stuff that's happening.
Meanwhile, Maya Rudolph has become friends with her boss's, with her husband, her fiance's boss's wife, played by Rose Byrne. And so
they're rich and fancy, and she's really type A, and she takes over and tries to become best friend.
And she's elbowing her way into being the matron of honor when it's supposed to be Kristen Wiig is the maid of honor, but because her life is already so untethered, she's having a hard time fulfilling her duties. And and then you've got the other bridesmaids who are an interestingly nutty bunch, particularly Melissa McCarthy, who is brilliantly funny as this character who you think at first is going to be the usual sort of cliched, like, butch fat girl, maybe she's a lesbian, but then just keeps pulling things out of her hat that are just nutty and smart.
I don't even want to tell people about most of the stuff that happens in this movie.
No, and we're not going to spoil
it. Because it made me laugh so much from start to finish. It's too long, but
never not funny.
But it's never not funny during that too long. And the other thing I appreciated is that it never grinds to a halt to be heartfelt. Mm-hmm. It kind of just drops it in at different moments, which reminded me a lot of old John Hughes movies in that they were really funny throughout from start to finish, but there would be heartfelt stuff and emotional stuff going on, but it never made the movie come to a standstill.
Except And not in Bridesmaids, I'm saying John Hughes. I've always thought that Cameron's big speech at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off was a little much.
It doesn't last for long enough,
though. I've got to stand up to him.
It doesn't last for very long,
though. But still, it
clangs. And that movie's so manic that it can absorb that.
I guess. To me, it always felt like such a, like, let's just switch gears real quick.
Right. Okay, sure, whatever.
But, generally speaking, he was really good at that sort of thing. And this movie does that very well. It's directed by Paul Feig, who created Freaks and Geeks. And who directed a movie that I think is a really underrated Christmas comedy called Unaccompanied Minors. I know you're not crazy about
it. It's all
right. I think it's really fun, and it's really charming. And and Bridesmaids feels like the best of his other work in terms of just the little moments of truth that are painful but funny, and the really good casting, from top to bottom. And Chris O'Dowd, who plays the love interest for Kristen Wiig, is just like so charming and believable and funny, and just like this kind of the kind of perfect guy that movies don't usually give us, but he's still perfect.
I will say two things about guys right here. One of them is that
they should see this movie.
Okay, I'm getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
But I was watching it, and I was occasionally frustrated by Kristen Wiig's character, who simply would not just come out and say, look, I can't afford to do this stuff.
Right.
This whole, like, being a bridesmaid, organizing all this stuff and paying for all this stuff.
Yeah, but,
it's... And I just was like, I was frustrated by her inability to just say, you're my best friend. Do you not understand that I have no job and I can't even pay my own bills and stuff like that? And I saw it with Gary, our friend Gary, and I said that was the thing that annoyed me. Like, why didn't she just say it when she says all these other things to Maya Rudolph? And he was like, you're a guy. Guys would just step right up and go, look, I can't do this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this because I don't have any money. So too bad. But apparently, like, there's this whole culture of weddings where women become really involved.
It's a big deal. Ostensibly, your best friend's only going to do it once, and so you want to be there for her. And so, you're a proud man when it comes to financial matters. I think that, I got it. I see where she would be like, I can't really do this, but I've been given the honor of having been asked to be the maid of honor. This is a huge event in my best friend's life. This will never come around again. It didn't ring false for me. I bought it.
The other thing is that I've been looking at some Facebook pages of some guys that I know in other places who are like, I'm not going to see this movie.
It's about girls.
It's about girls. And I'm like, are you a grown man? Oh, God. Or are you a 13-year-old child?
Yeah, this movie will not give you cooties, I promise.
Yeah. I don't understand. I don't understand. Well, I don't understand anybody who will self-select, like, out of something because of...
That would be like me saying, I'm not going to go see True Grit because I tend to not like Westerns.
Yeah. It's this whole weird thing of like, I don't see myself as such and such, and therefore I'm not even gonna look at a movie that might
not be directly aimed at my demographic.
Threaten that thing. Yeah. Mm. It's just very weird. And like, here's the deal. This movie's funnier than The Hangover.
And
I should back up and say that most of the guys who I have been, encountering on Facebook who are not going to go see it are like, I don't care. I'm just going to go see Hangover 2. And I'm like, and every time I see that written down, I say, Bridesmaids is funnier than The Hangover.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about Hangover 2. I haven't seen Hangover 2. But Bridesmaids is funnier than The Hangover.
No question. No question. And so, yeah, don't be an idiot.
It's the funniest thing I've seen all year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's only May.
May. But still.
But that's 5 months. They could have given me 5 months of funny things up till now.
And yeah, and they haven't. And yeah, and I originally saw this movie at South by Southwest, and I saw it like after midnight, and I thought it was really funny, but I thought, oh well, maybe because I saw it in a packed, excited theater, and we were all exhausted, But no, I went and saw it again just to make sure that it wasn't just that, and yeah, it was still entertaining. We actually one of our listener emails this week
We have one of those.
We have a couple this week, actually, yes. And folks can always write us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Reese asks if we've ever gone to a preview screening of a movie and disliked it only to change our opinion after seeing the theatrical release.
I don't understand that question.
Well, like, have you seen a movie before it opened, not liked it, you know, maybe given it a bad review, and then for whatever reason seen it again and reevaluated it? I've actually had the opposite happen, where this is in college, so my taste was less trustworthy, but I saw National Lampoon's European Vacation, speaking of John Hughes, in a packed theater, and thought it was just hilarious, and wrote this review talking about how funny it was and blah, blah, blah. And then I saw it again with a friend of mine on a Tuesday night in a theater with four people in it, and it sank like a rock. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember. I can't think of any movie that I saw and didn't like and then saw it again and liked.
This question suggests to me that the movie has been altered somehow.
Well, he's not asking about Bridesmaids specifically. He did bring up the fact that there were things in Bridesmaids in the movie there are things that are in the trailer for Bridesmaids that aren't in the movie, and you know, whatever.
Stuff in the trailer is not in the movie?
Yeah.
Which that happens all the time.
Yeah, that's a thing that happens and whatever. But no, he cites the example of Roger Ebert seeing Brown Bunny at Cannes and hating it, and then seeing it again later and liking it. Although I think I think there might have been a recut between the two times
I
saw it.
I see.
But yeah, I can't think of an example where I saw a movie and didn't like it. Usually, if I see a movie and don't like it, I don't see it again. For one thing, I have one. The Virgin Suicides, because when I saw it the first time, I was enjoying it the whole time. And then when I left, I was like, God, that sucked. But then I was thinking, well, wait, I was liking it for most of the – what happened? So I went and saw it again, and I realized –
You don't like the ending.
I don't like the last, like, right. 5 minutes of The Virgin Suicides. Right. Like, it totally sort of underscores and highlights everything that was just sort of implied and that you could pick up if you were paying attention.
Right.
And that's what bugged me. So I realized that I like the movie and just hate the ending. But you leave with a bad taste in your mouth if you don't like the ending. It's like how Purple Rain isn't a very good movie, but it ends with that amazing concert sequence. So you leave the theater going, "Woo, that was
and
great!"
And that part where he takes the guitar and
it shoots
things out. Stuff. Everybody, who's calling me?
Somebody in the Dallas Metroplex.
Oh. I'll have to call this person back.
So that's my answer. Virgin Suicides was a movie that I saw and didn't like, and then I saw it again and liked it more.
If I hate something, I'm not watching it again. And if I hate something and it's just bonkers crazy, then I'm watching it like five more times. And I'm encouraging other people to watch it too. Generally, if I love something, I'll watch it again, and it will just confirm to me how much I love it. Unless it's something from when I was much younger, and then realized that I was just young and stupid.
Yeah, it turns out Eight on the Lamb wasn't that good, right?
No, it's so pretty great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Eight on the Lamb is pretty good. It's all Bob Hope, Phyllis Diller movie that I saw when I was a kid, and I was super into it. And then I watched it again recently on
cable.
TCM or something. Mm-hmm. It's got Phyllis Diller in it.
Yeah, I mean, boy, did I get a wrong number.
Phyllis Diller is great.
Still funny.
Yeah, you know, boy, did I get it wrong. It's terrible, too. Yeah,
stinks, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. The other film that we both saw this week was Priest.
Ninjas.
Ninja priests.
They were ninja priests battling vampires.
Goopy, faceless vampires.
Yeah, kind of monster-y vampires.
Yeah.
I like the last 15 to 20 minutes of this movie because that's when the stuff happens. That's when the explosions happen.
Yeah.
And that's when all the priests, the ninja priests, crucifixes turn into Chinese throwing stars.
I was so.
And they stab everybody.
I was so disengaged by that point of not caring.
The motorcycles are running around dropping TNT on things.
I did like when he opened his utility Bible and all those little spinny crucifix stars came out of it. And then he slow mo throws them at all.
Like
the
Maggie
things.
Q.
Maggie Q was good.
Chopping that guy up into chunks like that.
But it was just.
Last go sneak into the last 15 to 20 minutes of Priest. The rest of it
in
is
2D,
this.
In 2D, by the way, because in 3D it's just darker and danker, and they don't do anything with the 3D.
here is my impression of
and,
the first.
And if you see the end, you get to see Christopher Plummer ham it up, which is the other right. only other pleasure yeah. that Priest offers.
Here's my impersonation of the first hour and 10 minutes of Priest. Vampires. God fighting.
Now, I am looking forward to Priest's eventual DVD release because somebody is going to put together a YouTube compilation of the awful, awful, awful performance given by Cam Gigande.
Is that how you say his last name? Do we know that?
I don't know.
Because I'm for Gigandet until I know better.
Anyway, that Cam guy. It's right up slash down there with Chris Klein in Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. As
Paul
far as
Walker
like,
sleeps better at night knowing that Cam Gigandet exists. I don't know. Again, like I always give the actors the benefit of the doubt. Like, really? And you can have, I think, as an actor, I think you can have a long string, especially in your early career. Mm-hmm. You can have a long, which is where he still is.
Yes, yes.
You can have a long string of real bad luck and be in terrible movies and give terrible performances because you are directed by terrible people.
Well, I'm not saying he'll,
don't know
he'll
what they're
never
doing.
Be a good
so
actor,
we don't know where
but he's not one now.
We don't know where he's going, but ooh-wee, this guy seems like he is just determined to waste every chance that Hollywood gives him.
I'm reminded of the great line from Ed Margolies and Stephen Ribello in their landmark book, Bad Movies We Love, in discussing Anne Margaret, where they say, before she proved she could act, she proved she couldn't. So if Cam Gigande ever winds up being like an actor of note somehow.
He is currently proving that he
can't. Exactly.
There's going to come a day, maybe, you know, it could happen.
It could happen.
That he
Stranger Things
out
have happened.
That he winds up in a good movie
yeah.
by a good director and gives a good performance. But I haven't seen it.
Hasn't happened yet.
I haven't seen it happen yet.
And yeah, it's like he's become the Screen Gems contract player of late because he was in Burlesque.
Yeah.
He was in The Roommate.
Yep.
And now he's
the
in
Roommate.
Priest. The Roommate. Yeah. Oh, man. So he's... Anyway, so it literally, like when it comes on cable, just watch for the Cam Gigande parts because they're they're a riot.
My favorite Cam Gigande part in the movie is when he does this.
Yeah. It's the worst seething ever.
It's audible. Like you can hear it come sucking in and out of his teeth, the wind.
There should be steam clouds coming
yeah,
out of his nose.
It's so great.
Yeah. Ugh.
So, there, yeah. It's a. Well, Paul Bettany is the priest, and he.
And this is from the guy that directed Legion, which is another dopey Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany has now been a priest or religious person in how many movies now?
Well, he was an angel in Legion. He was the self flagellating guy.
He was the leg
Da Vinci
mutilating
Code.
Guy in the Da Vinci Code, which is the most hilarious scene in the movie.
What? Now, what? What's he, what was he ever good in? Because I didn't even think he was all that good in A Beautiful Mind, where he's the spoiler figment of Russell Crowe's imagination.
I don't know. I'd have to IMDb him and find out. But he's been in a lot of stuff.
He's banging Jennifer Connelly.
You know? They're married, right?
Yes. So I presume they're also banging.
Maybe.
I like to think the spark is still alive in that marriage.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not saying firsthand.
Honestly,
I know
I don't
anything.
Care, actually. But... Yeah, he's getting typecast now as like the extreme priest.
Yeah, the holy warrior or whatever.
Yeah. So
yeah, Priest is what the Brits would call a dog's breakfast of a movie, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It's really boring, is all.
Yeah.
And except for that last bit.
Yeah.
It just made me sit there and think to myself, if this had been rated R, and it were nonstop violence and gore. And vampires doing things. Like
yes,
the vampires
yes.
didn't even really do anything. And if you're going to make another boring movie about vampires, then
paint the screen red.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah. I'm over the vampires. I'm admittedly interested to see what Bill Condon is going to do with the Twilight franchise.
Because he's nice.
Because
Bill
he's
Condon.
Yeah, and he's talented and yeah. he's like he if anybody could actually, you know, stir the pot a little and make those movies interesting and find a more human dimension.
Full disclosure.
He's been to our house.
Right.
But still,
yeah.
even if I didn't know him, the tiny bit that I know him personally,
yeah.
I would still think, okay, because you know, he has horror roots. He did, you know,
yes.
Strange Behavior and Strange
yes.
Invaders and Candyman 2 and stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, but yeah, otherwise, vampires, over it. I'm quoting the hipsters on the Happy Endings episode. That wasn't a. That was a.
Who's gonna know that? Who's gonna know that you just did
everyone because I just footnoted it.
Well, you are now, but who's watching that Happy Endings show? Well, you and
enough,
me and
enough people that they renewed it. So yeah. You know,
it's not a bad show.
It's. I think it's real funny. I'm excited that it's that they're making more of them.
What other movies are we talking
so
about?
So now there's
we talk about some of those two little.
There, yeah, we've got two little movies that I saw seen. Two and yeah. Dave saw two. So yeah. I will start with Hey Boo. Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a documentary about Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird.
And she's still alive, right?
She is still alive. She has not given an interview since 1964.
That's great.
Yeah, which good on her, I think. But the movie works around that really well. They talk to all these people who were involved in various stages of writing the book, publishing the book, and making the movie. So, like, you meet this couple in New York who basically, like, apparently Harper Lee was living in Manhattan and working as, like, an airline, like, working at the airport for, like, Eastern Airlines. She was at the desk.
Nice.
The ticket desk.
Nice.
And they basically, like, gave her a Christmas present of basically enough money to live on for a year so she could write this book. So she took it. So she, they basically.
I want that Christmas.
Yeah, present. Totally. Well, it was like 1960 or like actually maybe when the book came out. So like it was the late 50s. So it was like $3,000 or something. But like that was enough for her to live on for a year,
right.
To write the book, and then, you know, the whole editing process and stuff. And it was called Atticus for a long time until they renamed it.
Right.
And you know, they talk about how sort of you know, she would go into the publishing offices and she was just this little mousy thing. And like, it reminded me of, there's that TV movie about Jacqueline Suzanne with Michelle Lee.
Right.
And at one point she goes into like either her agent's office or publishing office. And she tells this girl to go get her coffee. Cause she just assumes that she's a secretary. And they're like, that's Harper Lee. But she gets her the coffee, which I think happened. Anyway. And so then it's just about the making of the film and the impact.
I think it's funny that you're talking about the,
Jacqueline Suzanne TV, can be drawn into any conversation.
The TV movie about the life of Jacqueline Suzanne.
Hey, look, Harper Lee was a character in it. What can I tell you? Right, anyway, on. So it's not a really deep documentary, but if you were a fan of the book, and who isn't, you know, it will definitely make you want to run out and reread it again. I know I do. And it's just, you know, cool things about like her background growing up and, you know, the town and, you know, what stuff was mirrored.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Hey Boo.
Hey Boo.
You know, they talk about Truman Capote being the inspiration for Dill.
That's what you call me, too. You say,
I've never
hey,
said
boo.
Hey
Boo.
Do you want me to start? I could. If that,
I'll put some Quiet Storm music
there
on.
You, go.
You call me Hey Boo.
What did Prince say last night? This is baby making music.
This is baby
y'all.
Making music, y'all. We saw Prince last night. That's one of the reasons we're so exhausted
yes.
this morning. Because we were partying with Prince. Because,
yeah,
night.
It was a housequake.
It was. And then we got up and had super heavy pancakes. So
it's been that kind of weekend.
We're kind of both a little draggy today.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what a hangover looks like for people who don't drink.
Who don't drink, right. Oh, we stayed up until 1:30 last night.
And didn't drink enough water.
And didn't drink enough water, and then we ate pancakes. Yeah.
We're crazy. So yeah, Hey Boo, if it opened in New York and L.A., if it comes where you are, check it out. Now you do one.
Hesher.
Yes.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays this real, like, metal kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He lives in a van. And he just invades a house where this guy, Rainn Wilson, and his kid live with the guy's mom and the grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Who's Piper Laurie,
right? That just made no sense what I just said. Sorry.
Rainn Wilson, his mother, and his kid.
Rainn Wilson's wife has just been killed in a car accident. He has a young son whose name is TJ, played by an actor whose last name is Brochu or Broku or something. I'm blanking on his name. Piper Laurie plays the grandmother, who also, they all live in the same house.
The mother,
the mom
the,
is
the,
dead.
The dead mother's mother or Rainn Wilson's mother?
Excuse me, I think it's Rainn Wilson's mother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that it matters.
The mom is dead, and it's been like 8 weeks since the car accident. So they are freshly
fragile
grieving. And I'm going to sneeze.
Isn't it?
Thank you. Hesher walks in to their house and basically sort of just takes over.
Is that the character name Hesher?
His name is Hesher.
I see.
Yeah. And and they accept this because all Rainn Wilson's character does is sleep all day. He has no will to move. The kid is, you know, in crisis because he's being bullied in the neighborhood and his mother just died and he's just miserable.
And his dad's coming.
The grandmother's helpless to do anything to push either of them forward.
Mm-hmm.
But Hesher comes along and is real violent and real mean and real awful. And he likes to set things on fire and destroy things. And
sure.
And he just wants to steal their food and eat it. And
this sounds like Bad Santa.
It's like a metal Mary Poppins, basically.
Okay.
Isn't
Natalie Portman in this movie?
Natalie Portman plays the frumpy grocery store girl.
I believe that.
Well, this is indie film land where right. Natalie Portman can mess up her hair a little bit and unmakeupify her.
That
and
was like then, that movie where Kate Beckinsale works in the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Natalie Portman is completely miscast in this film as the mousy kind of loser girl.
I have this theory that she knew she was going to get knocked up, so she made like 8 movies in a row so we would not stop seeing her while she went away. Because she was just in No Strings Attached. She was in that Don Roos movie. Your Highness. That Don Roos movie that just came out on DVD.
Another Woman or something.
Yeah, and she's in Hesher.
Yeah, she's in something like else. 17 movies.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Here's a problem with this movie, and I said this in my review on movies.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall a Christmas card that we got in the mail last year from Garrison, our friend who lives
Kentucky?
In the Midwest.
Wherever he lives.
And it had Gal from the band Gorgoroth on the front of the card. Now Gal is this awesome Norwegian who is sort of, you know, he's a scary dude. And he's a scary guy.
Is he of the, like, church-burning
yes.
branch of yes. Norwegian death metal?
Okay. Yes, yes. And Gorgoroth, they were a Norwegian death metal band. They're not a band anymore.
But, is Gal, like, doing time?
No. He's a free man.
Because well, we saw that documentary about
that. No.
Yeah, okay.
He has not killed anyone, nor has he been convicted of any crimes.
I see.
To my memory.
Okay.
I might be wrong factually.
All right, cut to the chase. Christmas card, yes.
These are important facts.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to take forever with this labored metaphor that no one's going to get. But
anyway,
go
it says this Christmas card. It's got Gal on the front of it, and it's a homemade card. And on the inside, it's like, Merry Christmas, guys. Ah, it's Gal, you know. Like, and I was like, well, that's really funny. That's the coolest, most metal Christmas card that we've ever gotten. But it's still a Christmas card. It's still celebrating, you know, the birth of our Savior. And the warmth of family.
And Gorgoroth is not about
love.
That.
And Gorgoroth is not about that. So this movie can't help but go in all the wrong directions with the character of Hesher, even though Joseph Gordon-Levitt is really great as this, you know...
Antisocial.
As this antisocial, like, terrible person.
It still becomes squishy at the end.
It still becomes squishy because it follows that indie movie template of... Here's an unusual outsider who has come to the home of a middle-class family and changed their entire way of living and taught them the true meaning of how to appreciate
who was
life.
Taught emotionally dead white people to
right.
embrace
and
their...
So,
blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay.
But Joseph Gordon-Levitt is good, and there's a lot of Metallica songs in the movie. And I will say that it's worth looking at for the, like, 10 to 15 minutes of screen time that Piper Laurie gets as mm-hmm. the grandmother, because she's responsible for... The scene in the movie that is the most, like, nakedly emotional and heartfelt and real
mm-hmm.
in the movie.
She's great.
She bursts into tears at this one point in the film and is like, it expresses how helpless she feels. And it breaks your heart. Like, I sat there in the theater and I just went, oh, Piper Laurie, I want to hold you. You know, like that. It was, yeah. But I have really mixed feelings, you know, about the movie. There were a couple guys I know, people I know,
yes.
who were in the screening room who got up and walked out. Which I love. I love that response. I love the walkout. That's such a, like, a disgust. Take that movie. I'm not even going to finish watching you. I like that.
We're done here.
Yeah. And then there were people that we know, like Ryan.
Ryan Downey,
super
who
into
loved
it,
loved it.
And
yeah.
So, you know, it's all over, I guess, the spectrum.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My other movie that I saw this week that you missed was The First Grader, which is based on a true story. I thought it was a documentary because it's being released by National Geographic Films, so I just thought, oh, it's a documentary. But no, it's based on a true story about basically in Kenya, where there had been the sort of this bloody uprising against the British, you know, by the Mau Maus, the revolutionaries, and who got put into essentially concentration camps and were tortured and beaten, and their families were killed in front of them and all this horrible stuff. And so then years later, a new government regime comes in, I guess like in the 90s, and basically says that, you know, we will provide education for everyone. And so this one guy who's like in his 80s or something, he's like really old, says, okay, well, if there's education for everyone, that includes me. So he basically goes to the local school to sign up to enter the first grade. And they keep telling him, no, you're too old, you can't do it. No, no, no. And then he goes, but it says for everyone. So like, well, you have to have a book, and you have to have a pencil, and you have to have a uniform. And he gets all the things, so they can't turn him
away.
Is there a
pencil getting sequence in the film?
No, but he does like sell his chickens so that he can buy like school supplies, and he buys these clothes and he like cuts the legs off to get the shorts. Like he makes himself a uniform.
This sounds a little too adorable.
It is a little pat, but at the same time, it's a movie that there's these really horrifying flashbacks where like literally his wife and child are murdered in front of him, you know. So it's this weird mix of like uplift and genocide. I don't know, but it's,
hooray!
I know, but it is all a true story.
This all went down,
and like, you know, and they actually, there's, you know, they do the thing where there's footage of the real guy at the end and blah blah blah.
Oh really?
Yeah,
and he's still alive?
No, he died a few years ago.
Okay,
but like he addressed the UN at one point. Like it was a big deal.
Really?
Yeah. Just, you know, because he's this sort of image of, like, the importance of an education at any age and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But really well acted. I went to a screening, and the actress who plays the teacher was there, and I'm blanking on her name now, but she's this gorgeous black British actress. She just did the stage Frankenstein that Danny Boyle did. You hear about this?
No.
It's like Benedict Cumberbatch, who was that? Just did that.
I know.
What the best name ever?
That's a guy's for real name.
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch. He just did that Sherlock Holmes thing from BBC that was on that air that everybody says was great.
That's a good name.
It's a really good name.
That's an Engelbert Humperdinck kind
totally,
of name.
Yeah. Yeah. It was him, and I want to say Johnny Lee Miller.
Imogene Poots.
There you go.
She's a British actress.
Fenella Wolgar.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so Cumberbatch and I think Johnny Lee Miller like would alternate from night to night who played Dr. Frankenstein and who played the monster.
Oh, I see.
They did it on stage in London, but they did that thing where
it's not like Sophie Okonedo, is it?
It's not Sophie Okonedo.
Okay.
No. It's somebody I never heard of. All right. But she's really good in it, and the guy who plays the old man who wants to come to school is really good. I mean, there's a few, like, there's some stock characters of, like, the troubled kid and the troubled kid's mean dad, and, you know, that felt very sort of lifetimey.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, I found a lot of it really moving and just, it was good. So, you know, not great, but it's a good movie. It's worth checking out.
All right, whatever.
I mean, yeah, it can't.
I'm sorry,
it can't stop being adorable at times.
I don't want to poo-poo this man's accomplishment.
Yeah, I know. You're dying to, please. So it's not a perfect film, but the good stuff in it makes it worth seeing. The good stuff outweighs the things that don't work.
So I saw Everything Must Go, the Will Ferrell movie,
right? Based on the
Raymond Carver story. The Raymond Carver story it's based on is Why Don't You Dance? Why Don't You Dance?
Who directed this? Anybody?
I forget.
Okay,
I'm sorry, I forget.
We don't have notes.
It's
this week.
I can't find my notes. Everything's bad today. I don't have my notes. I'm sleepy. It's all hot and it hurts
and stuff.
Yeah. It's about a guy who's an alcoholic, and his wife kicks him out of the house and throws all of his possessions out on the front lawn on the very day that he is fired from his job for being an alcoholic. And you find out that the wife kicked him out because he fell off the wagon, and she's a recovering alcoholic too, and you never see her on camera. But he spends a week on his lawn trying to figure out what to do next, and he winds up having a garage sale of metaphors. And it is unlike any Will Ferrell movie you have ever seen, even if you have seen Stranger Than Fiction, because Stranger Than Fiction was a lot of comedy as well as drama.
Wasn't there,
this is straight up drama.
Wasn't there some other dramatic Will Ferrell movie?
Winter Passing?
Yeah. With like Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah, but he wasn't, I think he was, I never saw it, but I understand that he was sort of funny in that.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Somebody out there, correct me if I'm wrong.
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And,
unlike any Will Ferrell movie.
Or maybe I did see Winter Passing. Maybe I reviewed it.
You might have.
I don't
it blurs together.
Is it, again, this is the situation where somebody you see like, so many things that you don't remember what
is
you saw.
Is it like Dustin Hoffman or somebody plays the older writer?
I forget.
Some sort of, or Alan Arkin, something like that?
I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah, I never
saw it. I do remember Zooey Deschanel. The minute you said that, I was like, wait a second, maybe I did see that.
But this is no Blades of Glory, you're saying.
This is not Blades of Glory, no. This is a serious movie. This is a drama. This is like, you. This is not, I mean, he's occasionally funny because he's Will Ferrell and he can't help but be sort of like occasionally sort of goofy. But it's always sort of as an aside
right.
to something else. There's some nice supporting people in the movie. Rebecca Hall from Please Give and Laura Dern is in it for a little bit. Huh. And Christopher Wallace Jr., and if that name sounds familiar, it is because he got his screen debut playing his own father in the Notorious B.I.G.
Oh,
movie.
Oh, right. I thought the name rang
that
a bell.
Is
okay.
This is Biggie's kid.
Notorious.
Yeah. This is Biggie's kid who's now an actor.
Oh, good
and he's
for
like
him.
A teenager.
Okay.
And he's
so he's the hip-hop Freddie Prinze Jr.
Good. He's a kid's good. I mean, like, he's good at this. And so, and like, is it Faith Evans? It's his mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like his second or third movie, and you know this isn't bad. It's I liked it more than I liked Hesher.
Okay.
And it has again that indie feeling, that indie movie feel where you know
let's all learn something.
It ends ambiguously, and it's not for people who are real hardcore Raymond Carverites because
do they mess up the story?
No, it's they expand it and they also sort of soften it because Raymond Carver had very little time for.
Niceness
for
sentimentality
for you know gushy you know
warmth.
Softness not that he's some hardcore you know extreme cage fighter guy but I mean he was a minimalist you
right.
know like he was he you drew your own you know conclusions from his work you were not given them with a hug
okay how would you compare this to the other best-known Carver movie, which would be
Shortcuts.
Robert Altman's Shortcuts, yeah.
It's an entirely different thing because this is a one story.
It's one story, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of tone
it's nice.
And, you know.
It's nice.
Okay.
Yeah. It's better than it should have been. How's that?
Okay.
And now I have a DVD recommendation of the week.
Let's hear it.
Well, for my friends Brian Hill and Mike Yeda in San Diego, I suggest that they watch Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans again until they get it. That's my DVD recommendation from them. They've been harassing me via text this morning about my bad advice on movies.com for recommending it and saying it was one of my favorite movies of the year. It was. Because it's rad, and but my actual DVD recommendation of the week is Black Death.
Oh, is that out now?
It's out now.
Okay.
Black Death.
Yes, you just like saying
that. I like saying Black Death. it's a movie about the Black Death.
Yes.
And it's set in the plague, in the...
Middle Ages
and the what's that dude from Game of Thrones
Sean Bean
this was his pre-Game of Thrones like this was his audition tape for Game of Thrones
Lord of the Rings was his audition tape for Game of Thrones
alright it was
he just looked good in chainmail or whatever
right
you know?
right
doublets or whatever the way they were
it's this cool movie about you know
Black Death
about the Black Death and people on a witch hunt and stuff and it's real gross, and it's better than the Nicolas Cage movie that was about the same thing, Season of the Witch.
Oh, right.
Earlier.
Golly, there's Damning with Faint Praise.
Yeah.
My DVD recommendation is a DVD that actually comes out this coming Tuesday, May 17th, It is a later era Otto Preminger film called Such Good Friends, starring Diane Cannon. And she
played pre-Christianity Diane Cannon.
Yes, this is like right. This is like the best era of Diane Cannon.
She like leads Bible studies or something.
Yeah, she does now. She does now. Yeah, but this was like from about 1968 to 1975.
Not that there's anything wrong with Bible study, unless you're doing it in a dumb way.
Exactly. But 1968 to 1975, I think for me are the primo Diane Cannon years, where she was really sexy and had that great laugh, you know, that dirty laugh. Anyway, so in this movie, she plays a like sort of Manhattan like. You know, housewife, her husband's a publisher and, you know, everything's hunky-dory. He goes into the hospital for a minor procedure, but because of hospital incompetence, what starts out as being this, what was supposed to be like a little day surgery, turns into this prolonged hospital visit. While he is sick, she finds his diary and basically realizes that he's been banging all of their female friends.
Nice.
So she decides that turnabout is fair play, and she sets out seducing all of his male friends.
Awesome.
And it's funny because I went back. I saw this movie a couple years ago at the American Cinematheque. They were doing sort of like a, you know, films of the early 70s series. So there was lots of Diane Cannon. It was great. And the reviews at the time were like, oh, the humor is so sick. But it's
sick about
just
it.
The fact that, like, I guess the whole thing with the husband getting sicker and sicker, like, because they keep giving they would give him the wrong blood type, and like just all these stupid stuff, they keep making him sicker, and so I guess at the time people thought that was just so outrageous, but now it's just, you know, it's just sort of a dark comedy.
Oh, there's a scene in Bridesmaids where people are vomiting on top of each other's heads.
Exactly. So. Times have changed. So I think this movie has aged really well, actually. But it's crisp and funny, and Diane Cannon's great. Ken Howard with a beard. You'll enjoy that. It's a terrific movie, and it really hasn't gotten its due over the years. It's been all but forgotten. This is the first time I think it's ever been released. I know it's the first time it's been released on DVD. I don't know if it was ever on VHS, but Such Good Friends. I very highly recommend it. And so that wraps us up for
the
week.
Can I go take a nap now?
We can, yes.
I apologize for being really boring this week.
No, you were scintillating.
I was totally boring. I promise it will never happen again.
Want to thank our podcast friends, The Popcorn Mafia with Gray Drake, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram, and the chatty grad students over at Secretly Timid. You can
aren't you going to be on the Criterion?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Thank you.
Don't forget.
Check out the Criterion cast this week. I'm very excited. They had me on to talk about the recent Criterion release of The Times of Harvey Milk. And I had a blast with those guys. It was a lot of fun. So check that out. Also, if you missed our interview on the podcast last week, Dave and I were featured. They did a whole.
I think there's a podcast about podcasts.
I know, that's pretty brilliant. They did a whole episode devoted to Linoleum Knife. So we're on there. You can find us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We want to thank. Our other email from a listener this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We want to thank Nema for telling friends about it and even putting it on her dating profile. So that's pretty rad.
Must love linoleum.
Yeah, I don't know what it says for the kind of men you'll be meeting or women or whatever, but you know, we appreciate the thought. And the other cool thing you can do in addition to telling friends about the show, go to our iTunes page and write a review. And
really?
And give us a star rating, yes. That's a thing that people
make it
can
a
do.
Good review and give us all the stars.
Well, yeah, obviously. I wasn't going to come out and say don't, that. Give us 5 stars and say how awesome we are,
don't
please.
F with us.
So that would be lovely. And next week's show, only 2 major films are opening next week. The Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides and Woody Allen's
Midnight Express. But I saw that Yves Saint Laurent documentary.
Okay,
too,
so yeah, we'll be talking about that, and we'll just be talking about things. So, you know, this would be a great week to send us emails because we'll have more time on the show next week to talk about just random stuff. So linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Bye.
Stop yawning.